Okay, welcome to this class on methods of evaluation. Does everyone have a handout? All right, thank you, very good. Last time I was so nervous I failed to introduce myself. I think I'm supposed to introduce myself. So my name is Derek Overholt. I am originally from Tennessee, but moved from Dixon, Tennessee, outreach of Whiteville, but I moved to Texas about 3 years ago, and I taught 4 years there in Tennessee, and I have taught 2 years in Texas where I'm at, and ready to teach the third year, excited about it. And the reason I moved to Texas was because this lovely young lady I met at Bible school, and I was the music teacher, and she was my student, and she got 100% on my test, and she was the only one who did, I think. So, and I didn't give her any extra credit or anything, but anyway, we got to know each other, and I moved down there and married her. I have two children, Alec. Oh, there she comes. I have two children, Alec and Megan. Very proud of them, and yeah. Okay, just some feedback from you quickly, and I maybe get tired of doing this, but how many of you have taught for 6 or more years? Raise your hand, please. Okay. All right, now, the rest of you, hold up your hand and show by how many fingers how many years you've taught. So just raise your hand, hold them at number of fingers. All right, so we have, counting Howard, we have about 70 years of experience here. So we have got, we should be able to get lots of good. And I prepared this topic more to be one of discussion from you, and especially some of the things I'm hearing from you, what you want to hear, it's going to have to come from you, because I guess I should have got that feedback 6 months ago when I was studying for this. But anyway, some of these things we'll cover, and others I didn't figure in, but I want to cover them for you so you can get the things you need to know. Okay, methods of evaluation. Evaluate means to determine the significance, worth, or condition of, and I added this, something or someone, usually by careful appraisal and study. Careful appraisal and study. It takes work. Maybe all you're hearing this week is just more work that you need to be doing. Please don't get overwhelmed. Remember, you don't have to do everything that you're hearing here. Just pick out a few things and try to improve in those areas and work on them. And then once you get those done, then you can go online or listen to the CDs and get some more ideas, because you can't remember it all. It's wonderful that they record it. You can listen to these CDs later on. So when you're evaluating the condition of something, in this case we're evaluating the student's progress. Let me tell you a story. So earlier this year, our family doubled, our number of children doubled in size, in number, and we decided we need to get a larger vehicle to haul them around in. And, you know, when we first got married, my wife said we're not allowed to buy a minivan. Well, she didn't quite say it like that, but she did not want to buy a minivan, because that just seemed like older married. That's not for young married couples. I thought it would be way more efficient to have a minivan than a car. Then you don't have to upgrade. But anyway, we had a car. We upgraded. We needed a minivan. So we started looking around for minivans. We found one that we sort of liked, and it was very good condition, but it had one problem. It had a smoke smell to it, and so we didn't get that one. And we went to Dallas. We had two more that we wanted to look at, and the first place we went to, it was kind of a run-down place. There was this, and it was, I'm not biased at all, but it was just kind of a, seemed like a the man who was running it was, I'm not sure, he just had the appearance of somebody that wasn't really professional, just the way he was dressed and everything. But anyway, I thought, well, we'll look at the van, see what it does. So we got to the van, looked at it. He had it parked out there for us. We started looking at it, and I got in the front seat and was trying the power doors and stuff, and I pushed the button, and nothing happened. So I tried the other button, nothing happened. It's supposed to have power doors. And then I finally figured out after I tried to start it, the reason the doors didn't work because the battery was dead. And so I was like, oh boy. Anyway, so I called the guy up. He came back out. He wasn't out with me. We were just looking at it. So I called him up. He came back out, brought another vehicle out, some jumper cables. And if you ever have jumper cables getting out when you're looking for a car, there's a big warning sign. Anyway, we started it up, and then the doors worked, and I felt a little better about it. But I kept on evaluating and looking at the condition of the van and trying to decide if this is what I want. And of course, I wanted to take it on a test drive. And luckily, I happened to notice the gas gauge before I left. And I noticed it was pretty much on empty. And because he was like, you know, take it and drive it around as much as you want. And I told him, I'm really kind of nervous about driving this thing around. I'm afraid I'm going to run out of gas. And so he hands me a $10 bill, I think. And, oh, just there's a gas station right around the corner. Go put gas in it there. And so I went and put gas in it and drove it a little bit. And then I noticed that the odometer reading on the van was about 3,000 miles higher than what it was listed for. So when I get back, I asked him about it. I said, what's up with this? And, oh, yes. He said there's a friend of his that had been using it, and they went on a trip or something, and they've been driving around a lot, you know, for the last week or two, and he had a good explanation for it, but for some reason it just didn't ring true. And I'm glad to say that I declined that one, although it may have been a good van, I don't know, but it just did not seem right. You know, on our school teacher salaries, we have to be very careful how we spend our hard-earned money, you know. If someone asks you how long you're going to teach, maybe you can tell them you're going to keep on teaching until you run out of money. That's a good way to put it. Hopefully, it's not that bad, though. But anyway, I was very concerned about carefully evaluating this van before I spend $6,000 of my hard-earned money. And maybe we should be that careful when we're evaluating our students. No, I said that wrong. We should be more careful in evaluating our students. It's much more important than a minivan. So, number one, is it important to evaluate? And when I first got this topic, I didn't really think it was just that terribly important. I think, you know, discipline issues are important, motivation issues are important. This class seemed like maybe not quite as important. But as I got to studying, I realized that it is very important to evaluate a student's progress. The description says, explore and understand the diverse options you have for evaluating the progress of a student. Grading, report cards, achievement tests, teacher observation, etc. So, it is important to evaluate. First of all, number one, this is letter A on your handout, it shows the student's progress or lack. And we have to know if the student is progressing. That is number one on your handout. We want to make sure they're progressing. If they're not progressing, then we're wasting our time. I mean, how many of you want to be wasting your time as a teacher? We don't want to waste our time. We have to do it because we want to know that they're progressing. And secondly, the sooner you catch a student's lack of progress in a certain area, the easier it is to fix the problem. The sooner you catch, and you don't necessarily have to write the whole thing down, but the sooner you catch a lack of progress or catch something, a lack of learning, the easier it is to fix. If it goes for a while and you don't fix it, it rapidly becomes a much bigger problem. And B, it shows areas where teaching is weak, where your teaching might be weak. And I think all of us as teachers, we have our strong point that we love to teach, and then we have our areas that we maybe aren't as good at or we aren't as interested in. And evaluating that progress can show us areas we need to shore up or strengthen. And on each of these, I have a place for your feedback. So C, what is your feedback? Why do you think it is important to evaluate? Any thoughts?
The only thing that comes to my mind was maybe for state purposes,
mm-hmm.
which that would be kind of a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. Evaluate for state purposes.
For the sake of the parents?
Okay. Very good. You want to be able to show the parents that they're learning as well.
Is that... For the sake of the student.
Okay. Good point. Excellent. Yeah. If the so the student knows that he's progressing as well. I mean, if the teacher's wasting his time, then the student for sure is too. Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay. When should you evaluate? And when I first thought of this topic, I was thinking, we should at least once a year, we should evaluate the student's progress, you know, do achievement tests or something and see if they've been learning. But as I got to studying, I realized, no, we need to evaluate at the end of every class period. And I'm not talking about a half an hour test or something where we sit down and we just do a thorough evaluation. We need to make sure that the student has learned that concept that we have just taught before we send them back to do their own work. If you send them back to do their own work before they have learned the concept, you're going to pay for it later on when you're checking their work or the next day when they check it or whatever, however you do it. So you need to evaluate at the end of every class. And again, it can just be a simple thing, and we'll talk more about how we do this later on. And B, we should do it more often for struggling students. Especially if it's a struggling student, we need to keep up with where they are at and make sure that they are progressing. And it's not so important how fast they progress. I think we need to vary the pace for different students. But just make sure that they are progressing. Otherwise, we're wasting our time. C, you should evaluate when new students move in. Evaluate when new students move in. And I'm sure most of you have had that happen to your schools. Maybe they moved in the middle of the year. Maybe they moved in during the summer. But that's a good time to evaluate where they're at. And that would be not necessarily evaluating progress as much as evaluating just where they're at currently, so you know where to start them. Okay, feedback from you for D. When do you evaluate students, or what is another time that you should evaluate students? Okay, if not, we'll keep moving on. Number three, what should you evaluate? So as we're looking at evaluating the progress, and we're talking about the progress mostly, but there are other things we should evaluate as well. And that would be academically, first of all. Or maybe that's not the most important one, but that's definitely one of the ones that we need to evaluate, is evaluate them academically as far as how they're doing in their grades. Secondly, we need to evaluate their behavior. That's another thing I kind of thought of later. We're not only teaching them, trying to have them show progress in their academics, we also want them to show progress in their character or behavior, which is about the same thing. They hopefully are learning things through our teaching that are going to help them in life. And then thirdly, we need to evaluate their morale. How are they doing? And maybe we should do a survey of our students sometime. How are you enjoying school? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much work do you feel like you're doing? Or how easy is the work that you're doing? I think maybe that'd be a good thing to try. I don't know, any feedback? Any of you ever tried that, to give some feedback from your students on how they're doing? Or can you just see? Or maybe they tell you without you asking.
I've heard of teachers that have, or about when you back up, you know, employees might have a quarterly meeting or review with their boss, employee performance. Mm-hmm. I've heard of teachers do a similar thing, and it's not necessarily the time. It's not when you talk to the student about what they need to be doing better. It could be, but it's how are we doing? How could I be helping you more? Mm-hmm. So So maybe every marking period or something.
Mm-hmm.
I never did that, but maybe it's a good idea.
Yeah. Rob.
I would try the thing like asking them how I was doing, but it's very difficult to get them to talk. I don't know if you have any like suggestions, like they, especially negatively, like it's hard to get them to really give you some worthwhile feedback.
Mm-hmm. How did you do that exactly? Did you?
Well, just like at lunchtime, instead of like, or when you're with them, just
mm-hmm.
like, I mean, what have other teachers done before me that
mm-hmm.
you liked or
mm-hmm.
what that I don't do? Or
mm-hmm. It's interesting getting feedback from students, and sometimes they talk about. I remember one thing that kind of where it hit me was I had taught for a number of years there in Tennessee, and then I quit after 4 years. I quit teaching, and then another teacher came in and taught, and one of the graduating students that first year after I quit teaching. In his graduating speech or whatever, something he said something about how that this teacher was the favorite teacher he ever had, and there's just always something in us that I guess I'm sure it's pride and that we just kind of just this pang of you know whatever. We have to be careful about that as far as getting feedback from students and does not let it affect us in a negative way. Anyway. Probably most of the time we know how what the student's morale is at. We can tell. Probably usually matches our morale, really, if you think about it. But you need to know how they're doing. If they're just overworked, or if they've got plenty of time, and how their attitudes are. Are there any other areas and things we should be evaluating and considering? We had, you know, academics, we had behavior, we had morale. Is there something else that I'm missing?
The relationship of students to other students, like older to younger,
mm-hmm.
boys to girls, and that
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
Sometimes I get that kind of feedback from parents in parent-teacher interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's my wife sitting at the back of the class, and she notices things that I'm not aware of because they're
mm-hmm.
watching me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm not looking at, she sees
mm-hmm.
That's valuable.
Yeah, very good. That's the another thing that goes along with evaluation is maybe have someone else come in and watch your classroom. If you're like me, I've got a totally one-track mind. I was teaching. And I'm not sure someone else came in the classroom, walked in, got something, and left the classroom, and I never found out they came in or went out. Now, you may be more observant than me, but I missed it. I couldn't believe it after the students told me, but I never noticed them come in or out. And it wasn't like my back was to them or anything either. But I was just all into what I was teaching. So probably it's good and bad in both ways. Okay, let's move on. And I want to spend most of the time in this part. What methods should we use in evaluation? I listed five different methods. Teacher observation, quiz and test grades, diagnostic tests, report cards, and achievement tests. And there might be some more. I left some blanks down there. We can add some more when we get finished. So number one, I think, and this is the thing we need to use every day, would be teacher observation. Keeping your eyes open. I've noticed that excellent course directors, or song leaders that really know how to lead a choir, they have ears that I don't have, and they know what's going on. They know what the alto is doing. They know what the soprano is doing. They know what the tenor, and they can just somehow hear all those parts. And they, if something happens, they hear it. I'm not sure. I don't know how they do it. I can't do it, but they're just, their senses are on, they're just all open to these, and that's how we should be as teachers, just always alert to things we have to observe. So number one in teacher observation is we need to check for understanding. Check for understanding. Make sure that they're understanding. And I got that from this from Doug LaMave on Teach Like a Champion. I'm going to read a paragraph from there. This is one of the techniques he promotes in this book. It says, good drivers check their mirrors every 5 seconds. They constantly need to know what's happening around them because waiting for an accident to tell them they're doing something wrong is a costly strategy. As a teacher, you should think the same way. Seeking constant opportunities to assess what your children can do while you're teaching, and using that knowledge to inform what you do and how you do it. Waiting until there's an accidental failure to comprehend means paying an unsustainably high price for knowledge. So always be aware of what's going on. Don't wait until they mess up to do something about it. And one thing he promotes in there is, in preparing for your class, think, what mistake are the students likely going to be making in this class? And how am I going to address it? That's really preparation there. And in checking for understanding, some of the things we can do is, one, we ask them questions. And this is the first time I'm having classes like this, and it's been a challenge because as I'm studying for my classes, there's three different topics I'm giving, and it seems like all three topics keep swirling around in my head. I have a hard time focusing on one. I keep thinking there's something I'm missing or something. But I know I said this in other of my classes, but you need to ask questions to see if they understand it. Let them tell you. Watch the students do several problems. And he talks in here about false positives. False positives are when a student gives the right answer, but it's just a lucky guess. And if you ask your students a lot of yes or no questions, you might get some false positives where they give you the right answer, but they didn't really, it was just a lucky guess. So be careful to ask them questions that are deeper than that. Ask them, what made you think the answer was that? Why did you choose the answer that you chose? And ask deeper questions that stretches them a little bit, makes them think more. So make sure, and this is number C now, or B. B was watch them do several problems. And then number three, ask students to explain. Get them to explain how they came up with their answer. And I don't know if any of you do this. Do you ever, at the end of your class, say, okay, now, does everyone understand this? And I do that too. But that's not really a good way to check for understanding. And I discovered that. Maybe, Howard, maybe you can give us some insight on that. Asking the students, does that work for you to ask the students if they get it?
Why do I want to admit it?
Yeah, exactly. So the student, if he gets it, of course he will say yes. If he doesn't get it, he might not want to admit to everyone else. Maybe he thinks that everyone else got it, but he didn't get it. He's not going to. So don't. That's not a very accurate way to check for understanding. Just say, hey, did you understand this? Likely, they're going to say yes, even if they didn't. Or maybe they partly understand it, but not totally. So you need to make sure you see them doing it. And there's something else I want to read out of this book yet. So in asking questions that make them think, here's an example. So the teacher says, who can tell me what the phrase off the deep end means? Student, it means someone is upset? Teacher, well, are they a little bit upset? Or are they really, really upset? Student, really, really upset. Good, says the teacher. Now, was that a good question? Did the student figure it out on his own? Or did the teacher give a clue on which the right answer was? So in that case, I think, you know, the teacher kind of tipped him off just by the way I said it, or the way the teacher said it. The student knew it's probably really, really upset because of the way. So try to make sure you ask questions that don't tip them off. And number two, after checking for understanding, number two is do something about it right away. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. The sooner you catch a student's lack of progress, the easier it is to fix it. And I don't know. I used to, when I first started teaching, I taught individualized. and the students checked most of their own work. I helped them with questions and stuff, but it was really difficult to really stay on top of where they're at. And then when it comes to the test or comes to the quiz, then suddenly I realized this student has been missing this concept all along, and I was not aware of it. So then it was a much bigger problem than if I could have caught it right away. So do something about it right away. Let me read one more piece yet. Yeah, it says in here, the shorter the delay between recognizing a gap in mastery and taking action to fix it, the more likely the intervention is to be effective. And especially, like, for example, if you're doing, let's say you're teaching them division, and you just come to a new concept in the division process. Here we have 903 divided by 3. And so you teach them how to do it, and then you give them a problem to do. So they go up there to the board, and they go, okay, 3 goes into 9 3 times, and then we subtract. Oops. 0. And then 3. And so we write the answer up there. And is that answer correct? Okay. No, it's not correct. So there we see, oh, they're not getting it right. They missed something. We're checking for understanding, and we realize they didn't understand what we taught them. Now, what do you do when a student, when this happens? What do you do? Say, no, that is wrong. Erase that and try again. Now, I asked you a leading question. It's easy to see what the answer is. I think what is important is to, before they erase anything, I tell them, figure out what's wrong. What did you do wrong before you erase it? And so I would tell them, so what's the first step in this problem? And you say, well, we have to take, how many times does 3 go into 9? Okay, 3 times. So the first problem with your work is that you... What did I do wrong here? Okay, I didn't put the 3 above the 9. It's kind of sloppy, and students are sometimes kind of sloppy, and sometimes that's what hurts them. So, you know, you have to point out the specific step where they made the error and say, okay, now try it with the 3 above the 9, and maybe they'll get it the time, maybe they won't get it. But if they don't get it, then you move to the next step and say, now, if 0, if you bring down, remember the steps are, divide, multiply, subtract, compare, bring down. If you get to the bring down step and your answer still cannot be divided by 3, then you need to put a 0 in the quotient. And point out the specific step. And that can help, you know, correct the problem right away so that they don't go back to their desk and get a bunch wrong because you failed to check for understanding in that area. So what else? What's your feedback now? What are some other ways we can use teacher observation in evaluating their progress?
I think I mentioned one of my talks that I have my students work in the blackboard a lot, so then I'm obviously observing as to where that error is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Another neat idea I heard recently, too, along with that, maybe you have a class that's, or maybe you have a blackboard that's smaller than your class. So rather than, how many of you have that? Okay. So rather than just have several at a time working it out, you can go to Hobby Lobby stores and buy these little bitty chalk whiteboard things. Just have one for each student. They love these things. And have each of them do their problem on that mini board, and when they finish, they flip it around and show it to you, and you can say right or wrong, and then they erase it and move on. So that was a neat idea I heard recently.
Is it a poor idea when you're having several
Okay. Okay, so the question is, you have two students working at the board, you have two students that are back observing this and pointing out, and they're supposed to point out if they make any mistakes. Is that a bad idea?
I have done that some. It would depend on the attitudes of the students.
Well, it's really good to put friends together.
There you go.
You know, it does. Because if you're best friends, they work together like crazy and figure out all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. If you've got, you know, a great big boy and a shy little girl, that's not a great pair. But the two big boys,
Yeah. I personally think it's a good idea, and I do this myself, because I think it keeps, you don't want the ones that are back at the table to be, you know, just not doing anything. They need to be involved and thinking through the problem just like the person on the board is. And if they're watching for mistakes, they're thinking through it as well. And like y'all said, if you do it in a kind way, they work together. They understand. Next time it'll be them up there, another guy will be back watching for your mistakes. So it could be a friendly thing if you give it the right mood. Okay, we need.
Question on that is, have already done your problem and have done it wrong, have been catching mistakes, of course, great stuff, which is a little different than the student or the classmates doing it.
Yeah, excellent idea. So have you as a teacher do it and make a mistake as you're doing it, and then see if they catch you. Just don't say that you. You, if you make a mistake accidentally, don't say that you just did that to see if they check you. I heard about that. Okay, we need to keep moving if we want to get through this. So let's move on to quiz and test grades. And again, there may be a lot of different ways of doing this. How many of you grade every lesson that a student does? Raise your hand. Okay, how many of you just grade the quizzes and the tests? Okay. And maybe that depends on the subject matter and different things like that. But depending how you do it, I think you need to be very careful about how you do the quiz and test grades. But number one, for sure, don't advance without mastery. So many times we have a class of students, we have three or four students that are working in a certain subject, and one of them fails the quiz. It's so tempting just to, well, maybe do a quick review or something and then just keep moving. We need to be very careful in that. Don't advance without mastery. Make sure they can master it before they move on. Otherwise, you're going to run into big problems later on. And I have for number two, check them yourself. And that's, again, if at all possible, do that. I know sometimes there's schools that have students check each other's quizzes or something like that, or maybe an older student check them. I don't really like that for several reasons. One, it's not as accurate. And two, you as a teacher need to be knowing where they're at, what mistakes they're making. It really is helpful for me to check their quizzes and tests myself because I can see where they're at and what areas, and I can improve my teaching to fit what they're messing up on, if that makes sense. So if you check lessons in class, every lesson in class, you're probably going to be up with it, and maybe it wouldn't matter as much. But. Any thoughts on quizzes and tests? How do you check them, or what do you do if there is a failing grade on a quiz or test? Yes, alternate tests. I think there's maybe even some alternate quizzes. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Sometimes a student won't just be having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they do poorly on the test, but when you give them problems, they can do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Had that happen.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in that case, what would you do? You know, if you thought their grade is because of a bad day, or they were, how would you handle that?
I'd probably
just leave the grade and just continue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could work too. If you thought they understood or they had been doing well in their lessons before. Yeah.
The thing with this, you know, breaking out when you on the test, seemed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she liked the class, so how do you help that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it comes down to knowing your student, knowing how they've been doing, you know, keeping in touch daily, and maybe even doing, you know, just some, maybe a couple of exercises, having them come to the board, do something. Maybe after the quiz, if there's a certain type of problem they were messing up on, have them come to the board and do that problem under a more relaxed atmosphere. Yeah, very good. Okay, what about diagnostic tests? And I have messed up big time in this area. We had some people move in, and I thought with my previous... I'm sorry, I said that wrong. We switched some curriculum in our school to CLE curriculum from Rod and Staff. And I had taught CLE when I taught 4 years in Tennessee, and I taught Rod and Staff the first year I had taught in Texas. And so I figured kind of with my experience in CLE, I could just kind of look at their grades and see about where they're at and transfer them, you know where to put them in CLE. And it did not work very well. There was some students that got badly misplaced in the CLE curriculum because we failed to do the diagnostic test. So I would highly recommend when you have students. So one of these is whenever you change curriculum, you need to do diagnostic tests. Especially if you're switching to CLE, do a diagnostic test to see where they need to be placed in the curriculum. And number two, obviously you need to do it for students that are moving in. When students move in to your school. Maybe there might be one case. There was one example. I had a student where we didn't do a diagnostic test. I had a student who his mother said that this student is just an A, straight A student. His average is pretty much like 99%, 98 or 99%. And I didn't believe her at first. I was like, this is the mom talking, yeah. but when he came, I realized it was true. This student was unbelievably good at school, and I was just amazed. I don't know if we did. I can't remember if we did a test on him or not, but it may be in a case like that you wouldn't need to. But as a general rule, I would advise doing diagnostics if they move in. And also, especially for students that are failing work. If you have a student that's consistently failing quizzes or tests after several times, maybe you need to consider doing a diagnostic test. And you can actually download those off of CLE's website for free. You don't even have to order them. You can download them off their website for free and just have the student do it so that you don't have to wait, because otherwise you have to wait for it to come in. You can just download it for free and have them do it, and then you know where they're at, where they need to be. Because maybe they need to be put back to where a student needs to be able to succeed. If they are constantly failing, it'll totally ruin their taste for school. And maybe when they're parents, then they'll not have a good attitude about school to their children, which is maybe why we have some of the problems we do today. Any other ideas on diagnostic tests? How many of y'all use diagnostic tests? Okay, some of y'all. So if you don't, I would recommend considering them in these situations. Okay, report cards, D. And report cards are mostly for the parents. We usually already know what their grades are, and I guess possibly it could be for the school board, but mostly you're doing report cards for the parents, and I think that was mentioned earlier. We evaluate to show the parents where they're at. And I would be curious to know how you do. I assume everyone does report cards, am I right? Everyone does report cards? Okay. So how many of you do report cards every week? Raise your hand. Okay. Maybe one or two. Okay. I think that would be ideal to do them every week. We don't do them every week, but it would be kind of neat. I guess it'd be maybe more work for the teacher. I'm not sure. But I think it's important to keep the parents involved. And part of that thing of what the report cards are for is to keep the parents informed of where the student is at. If they see a failing grade, they can do something about it. I would say at least do them, number three, at least do them every 4 to 5 weeks, report cards, so that the parents can be in touch with where their student is at. And the one thing I hate on report cards is the back of report cards where you have to write down the behavior thing. That is just, it seems like that is always so hard to do. Any thoughts on report cards or that specific problem? How do you do that behavior on the report cards? How do you grade that? Mm-hmm.
Wrote that all out from the report card, and then randomly, it didn't, like the theory was, I do it every week, but it mm-hmm. didn't happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would write down if I saw a student do something that was very good or on the other side, I would just write the number down and the plus and minus behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That gave me a little bit more than just the last week.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Good feedback.
One thing, go ahead. The parents shouldn't find out about a problem from the report card. The problem should be addressed before report card time.
Yeah, if it's a problem, you know, for sure. Yeah.
You might be able to swat a couple flies with one whack, having students evaluate themselves. And that's an interesting idea. I did it with a phys ed class, and I told them that half of their grade, they're going to be graded on attitude, half of their grade is the score they get themselves, and half the other half is what I evaluate them. They gave themselves a horrible score, and they had to perk up their own game.
Wow, that's an interesting idea.
They gave themselves horrible attitude, and I couldn't tell they had a bad attitude. Fairly revealing grade.
Yeah. Very good. What about, I know we're moving this fast, but I want to answer the questions y'all had earlier. What about grading in art? How do you grade them in art on the report card? Do you grade each project individually, or do you just kind of give a general how they're doing maybe? Or?
Do you have a rubric for that? It helps. I didn't always know what a rubric was. Like, for example, like for art, I kind of made my own, like, in neatness. And it would help. You could give them, it would be a fair way of grading, but you
Okay, yeah. Very good. And it looks like we're about out of time. Yeah, achievement tests. It's definitely something I would recommend doing. We had been doing them, Houston, Tennessee, we did them every other year, but since we switched curriculums here in Texas, we do them every year because we are having some real struggling issues with things, and I think it's good for us to do them every year. How do y'all do achievement tests? Do y'all do them every year? Raise your hand if you do it every year. Okay. Every other year, raise your hand. Okay. And if you have a good established school and they're doing well, that's probably enough. But every year is good too, and it's nice to see the graph that you send them into John Troyer. I'd highly recommend you send your achievement results into John Troyer so you can compare your school with other Christian schools as well. Anyway, sorry we ran out of time. Thank you so much for your attention.